everyone, and welcome to episode 558 of the MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. I don't know how long you've had this, but I just noticed your VV dartboard in the back.
It was Raghavan. It switched over a few months ago, so now it's VV's
counting down
turn.
The days. Yeah.
Only a month ago. We're almost there. Less than a month now. But we got another host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon ZA.
How is
it? It is a new take on the battle system. So I think that got people like kind of 50-50.
Is it a classic Pokemon game though, or is it like some spin-off game? Is it supposed to be
a
part of the main series?
It's technically a spin-off. A spin-off. So it takes us back to X and Y, and they went to a cooldown-based battle system as opposed to like turn-based. Well, it's still sort of turn-based, but it's cooldown focused. And I've been having a fun time, but I think the Mega Evolutions have been I love creature designs, and I think that it's one of the megas don't look as creative, but they made my boy Totodile cool, so I'm happy with that.
So today, we're going to be talking about a few different things. We had a pretty interesting survey from Wizards last week that we wanted to get into, some drama around that. Speaking of drama, there was some Reddit drama about Standard and moderators. We got some news on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles confirmed that we didn't know before, and then some arena stuff jumping around a little bit. Modern RC in Houston, Pioneer being a dead format, Fishmail, of course. So that's the overview for today. Before we get into it, though, we have a couple of sponsors. Our show is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more. It pays just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance. It pays just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment when order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. Our show is also brought to you by Heavy Play, advanced gaming equipment. The ETB playmat features a unique folding design, allowing you to fit it in a standard laptop bag. It's available in a wide variety of colors and also with original art. Equipmag lets you snap all of your gear to your playmat to move between rounds. Not that you need to, because you're going to be sitting at table one all night. So head over to heavyplay.com/mtggoldfish and use the code mtggoldfish to get 10% off at checkout. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And let's talk some Magic. And let's start with what I think was the most controversial topic of the past week, which Wizards posted a survey about Spider-Man. And Richard, what went down with this survey?
All right. We were exposed, Seth. We were exposed. So there was a question in the survey. There are actually many things wrong with the survey, but we'll get to the one that got the most popular thing and a response from WotC themselves. There was a question that said, to what degree did negative influencer commentary impact your perceptions of Spider-Man before the set released? And then you get to rate it 1 to 5. And then there's also a follow-up question to specifically name such influencers that affected this. And it was a freeform box, so you can write anyone's name in there. And everyone's like, oh my God. And then the general response from the community was like, first of all, WotC, they actually defended influencers. They're like, actually, Wizards made a bad set. That's their fault. Like, why are they doing this? But then the other thing was like, well, why are you asking us to name and shame influencers? Are you going to punish them, etc.? And then Blake actually took to Blue Sky and said it was a bad question, that they always ask this question, but without the word negative. So he felt that adding the word negative there made it sound like, you know, something dubious, but it was not intended to be. And then, yeah. So there is a big discussion in the community about, like, what is the role of the influencer and how much influence do they really have? And Seth, did you get lots of angry emails about ruining Spider-Man?
actually, no. Like, the response from the community was, I think, very much on the influencer side of things, if you got to pick sides of this thing. I will say, I think the question was almost a little worse than that, just because it actually had, it first asked you, oh, did you hear any influencers talk about Spider-Man? So you're just putting all the names of the influencers that you watch. And then the next question was, oh, how did the negative perception from all these people influence your perception of the set? So they had you put in the names first before you knew where it was going. Like Wizard said, and like Blake said, it is just a bad question. Even discounting all the like drama about it, I don't know how you gather any good information out of that wording, because like the way it's worded, to what degree did negative influencer commentary impact your perceptions of the Spider-Man release? How do you answer it greatly improved my perception? Like, how do you possibly pick a 5 or a 4 out of that? Like, just with how the question is worded. So I feel like even discounting just the silliness and the divisiveness of the question, isn't it just a bad question data-wise, too, if you're actually trying to generate, like, meaningful data about how people reacted to Spider-Man? Because I feel like it's just going to funnel everyone into picking, like, the negative options, right? How do you answer that question positively?
I think the whole survey is bad.
The whole survey, yeah.
I think the survey, just, like, the questions and then, like, I mean, everybody knows about the if you finish the survey, it just kicks you out, or it says that your survey doesn't count. So I don't know. I thought the whole survey was rough, and so am I surprised that the whole like wording and then the questions were rough? No, not really. This whole one was. Ugh.
Wait, but I get what they're asking. Like, sure, they didn't word it correctly. And I feel they're not using the word influencer right, or maybe they're putting too much credit into influencer, but I believe what they're trying to ask is, to what extent do you think the negative online sentiment of Spider-Man affected your perception of the set? Like, I think they are trying to ask something along those lines, and they just did it wrong. But like, those are the people, Richard, that are like closet Spider-Man enjoyers. Like, oh, I don't want to say I like it because, you know, everyone online hates it and I feel like I'm betraying my community. Like, they're trying to get like that, you know, see how much of that is happening, or if people are just like, actually, I don't care, I don't read Reddit and I just do what I want and I love Spider-Man or I hate Spider-Man. Like, they're trying to understand that. But again, asking people to self-assess where the root of their emotions come from is probably problematic to begin with, and then they're not really asking it in the right way, and like, but you can kind of see what they're trying to do.
Even if you ask it the right way, no one's going to answer that truthfully, right? Like, I like, is self-assessing, right? Like, I do not imagine that anyone who is enjoying, like, the demographic I imagine that, like, Spider-Man would bring normally is not exactly going to take every survey, right? The enfranchised player will take the survey is what I think will happen, right? Like, oh, I've played Magic for 50 years. I hate Spider-Man. I'm going to gladly take the survey. But the people that are enjoying Spider-Man, I'm curious how many people that enjoyed Spider-Man and bought Spider-Man actually took the survey.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we probably don't have any way of knowing that. I do think that it is kind of funny that in some ways it kind of seems like speaking out of both sides of your mouth when it comes to Wizards, because they definitely will say, like, I remember when there's arguments about like metagames and stuff and you use like arena tracker data, or there's big conversations on Reddit or Twitter, Wizards will definitely be like, well, you got to remember, most of the community is casual. They're not, you know, commenting on Twitter. They're not posting on Reddit. They don't have a tracker for their arena. So we have to take all that data with a grain of salt. And then this survey, as you said, Krim, is likely getting those same people, right? Like, it's people who are on the WotC Instagram or in a WotC Discord or following WotC Twitter accounts. If you're some casual who isn't on the, you know, magic internet, you're probably never even going to see this survey at all. So hopefully Wizards, you would think, would adjust for this. There are statistical ways that you do surveys and you adjust for this. Based on some of the questions, it makes me wonder, like, how well the whole survey is constructed and so forth. I'm curious, though. I think, Richard, going back to what you said, I think it is a legitimate question to ask, right? The idea that we want to know how much of an impact influencers actually have. I did take some issue with the negative framing, especially since I don't remember them being like, oh, to what degree did all the positive influencer commentary about Final Fantasy influence you buying Final Fantasy? Like, it crops up now when you have a set that's doing poorly, at least in the realm of PR. And then you asked this question. So I felt it was a little bit awkward that it just showed up there. But I do think it's a legit thing to try to measure, like, how big of an influence do creators and influencers actually have? And I'm curious what you guys think about that. Like, how much of the issues with Spider-Man, and I've seen it even like today talking to people about Avatar on social media. And some people are just like, well, everyone's so negative right now and Spider-Man went so poorly that I'm less hyped for Avatar than I was like a couple of months ago just because of how Spider-Man went. So it's still kind of carrying on in the community. But how big of a role do you think influencers did have in this? Basically, many big magic influencers and creators posted some sort of negative video or commentary about Spider-Man. Richard, what do you think? Are we responsible for this? Like, we, the community of creators and influencers, not just us in specific.
Kind of, but I want to address something that Blake said. So part of that thread, they're like, we don't punish creators that speak out, you know, against our products. And that's like 100% BS. Okay, obviously, when you choose people to partner with to promote your product, right? So they may not censor you, right? But obviously, if you go dunk on their product time and time again, they're not going to choose you, right? They're going to choose the person that, you know, likes your product. It's like hypnosis, right? Like, does it really work? I don't know, right? But you want to choose the person that plays along with you and not the person that doesn't, because overall it's just a bad experience, right? So yes, like, they may not explicitly blacklist you. They may just prefer other creators over you that are more, you know, optimistic about their product, right? And it just makes business sense. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't make them any sense to promote people that have negative things, right? And then also, they don't want to censor people like explicitly because it looks bad, right? So that's just a net bad for them. But okay, anyway, back to the question. So I think influencers themselves are overblown, like us, like whatever, right? Like, we have some amount of impact, but like, not really, right? Like, what influencers do is bring eyeballs, and I think the opinions kind of not matter, right? Like, I think what actually matters is Joe Blow's Reddit thread at the top. Right. And people perceive that as organic. Right. Because if an influencer says something like, well, they were paid by WotC, they have business conflicts and interests and things like that, I can't believe them. But this random Redditor, they have nothing to gain from dunking on this. Right. And this like 5,000 upvote thing seems legit. I think that has a lot more impact, and just like overall community sentiment has a lot more impact. Influencers play some role in here. Right. But I think just overall, the normal person speaking out does, you know, way more impact. And I will say, like, whatever the normal person says or gets upvoted is not necessarily correct. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like Reddit is actually a hive mind. Right. We've seen cases where it's not correct. Like, for example, Walking Dead Secret Lair. You know, we're all down the Secret Lair path and exclusive cards because it does work. We know that Reddit is correct for Spider-Man because you can just see the collector boosters on the shelves, right? Before that, you may have had the question of, you know, is Reddit just the internet hive mind and it doesn't work? But in reality, casuals are buying it. But like, no, because we see collector boosters just readily available. The price is going down. But just don't believe everything you see on the internet. Like, I read last week's comment section. Oh my God, why did I do this? Right. And the number one comment was like, herder, you know, Richard said VV was bad and unplayable. Right. And I'm like, no, I didn't. like, am I going crazy? Like, what do you mean? Right. It's like 50 upvotes or 50 likes or whatever. Right. It's like very liked comment thread because everyone wants to dunk on Richard. And I'm like, okay, cool. But hold on. Wait a minute. I watched the episode and it was the most glowing review of VV you could ever imagine. And like, because people get this narrative in their head, and then when they see something that matches that narrative, they click upvote or like, and it goes to the top, right? We might talk about this later, but like pick two draft, I feel there's a narrative around it that everyone goes to the top without actually experiencing it or thinking about it, or, you know, it may not reflect their actual personal opinions because maybe they didn't spend time to form it, but there is like a hive mind kind of mob mentality that goes on as well. And all this to say is I think Wizards is trying to measure this somehow, but like Krim said, asking people to measure themselves is probably kind of rough. You kind of just get their thing and then make your own conclusions, which is why it's hilarious that you click through the survey and then some amount of people got the you're not the target audience we want, so we're throwing out your results. You're like, what? Right? Like, you should at least keep it.
That was
and if you
really
want to throw
bad.
It out, don't tell them. Right?
Yeah, why like, would you tell them that? Just, like, quietly let them feel like they did the survey.
Exactly,
and they would
right?
never know.
That was so bad, dude. I can't.
How, so in a broader perspective, and I agree, and I think it's also important to remember that I think in some ways, influencers and creators are also reflective of the community. And I think that, like, in some sense, yes, there are some things that are just, like, original creative things. But a lot of times, the creator community is talking about what people are talking about on Twitter or Reddit that is coming up from the broader Magic community as well. So there's a bit of give and take there. What do you think in a broader sense, though? Do these surveys matter? Like, if everyone goes into the survey and it says, I really hated Spider-Man and the influencers tanked it, or I don't have any money to buy a car. Like, this was one question out of a survey that I did the whole thing, and it was literally took me over an hour to actually do it well. But, like, does this matter? Does this influence, do you think, the course of Magic? Are these the numbers when Mark Rosewater says only 8% of people dislike Universes Beyond or whatever? Is this where it's coming from? Is surveys like this? Like, does this actually matter? Is this all just kind of for fun?
I mean, I hope it matters, right? Like, you know what I mean?
This is the worst fun activity ever.
Yeah, because, like, recreational, like, survey taking.
Recreational survey taking.
Is not a hobby, right? So, yeah, like, I mean, I hope it matters. That's one of those things. I have to imagine to some extent that they use this for when they talk about, like, when they reflect in a couple of years, right? They always do that with older sets as well. And old, like, you know, they take surveys. Hey, we learned that y'all hated Aftermath. And then they try to pivot and shift everything, at least for the most part, in Aftermath, right? So I don't know. I mean, I hope so.
I think it's a data point. And I think it matters, but not directly. My favorite is the Tomer method of polls, right? So Tomer puts up a poll and is like, vote for the one you want most, right? It's like A, B, C, D. And then, like, D gets the most votes and he's like, yeah, I'm doing A, right? Like, he just ignores her. Like, he sees the poll results and then he interprets it, you know, with all of his other information, which is like how you should do it, right? You know what I mean? Like, everyone says they want D, but I know they don't actually want D. I know they want A. And it sounds counterintuitive, but that's what you have to kind of do. So I feel WotC will use this data amongst other data and then make their own interpretations, right? So regardless of what you say, it doesn't matter. But what kind of matters is, like, the difference, right? Like, maybe everyone was, you know, negative for Spider-Man, and then they're negative for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but then they'll see everyone was positive for Final Fantasy. You're like, okay, what does this really mean? Does this really mean Universes Beyond sucks, or we chose the wrong IPs? Or does it mean small sets suck or pick two set? You know, like, they'll try to figure it out with this information, cross their sales, cross whatever. Yeah, you know, there's like tons and tons of data, and, you know, even though we don't want to admit it, they've done a good job so far, right? Like, Wizards has grown every year. Magic has grown every year. People are more hyped. There are more players than ever. And they have managed to navigate this, even though we don't like it currently. It has somehow worked out, right? So they probably got it under control, but who knows?
I would imagine that the survey, kind of like what you said, Richard, like, I imagine that it plays a role. And I think if you do the Spider-Man survey and you get a whole bunch of responses saying, I didn't like the set, or I hated the set for whatever reason, I don't think that necessarily means Wizards is going to be like, oh, we're going to throw out this whole thing. But I think that would lead them to investigate more and try to figure out, like, what was the problem here? How can we improve that in the future? So I imagine it has an impact, but I also imagine it isn't as straightforward as, oh, everyone disliked this, so we're just not going to make Universes Beyond anymore or something. One more question about this before we move on to another topic. I saw this come up in response to the community, but you're taking this survey. You had a favorite creator who talked about Spider-Man. How do you answer that question? Because I saw some people being like, oh, you know, I didn't want to snitch out my favorite creator, so I didn't even respond to that, or I told him to go F off or whatever. And I saw other people saying they filled it out honestly. Like, how would you actually just fill that out personally? Like, when I filled it out, I put my own name in there and a bunch of other people who I'm friends with that make content. And I said, it probably, like, somewhat worsened people's perception because that's my honest opinion of the thing. But, like, was that the wrong way to answer the question?
If the wrong way to answer the question was honestly, then I don't know what to say, because I feel like I would, I don't know, when I play video games, right, I try to answer the questions NPCs ask me like I actually would answer them in real life, right? So I guess that's kind of boring, but you know what I mean?
Nerd.
Exactly, right? I know. But I do the same with surveys, right? Because that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
Like, be honest on these surveys. If you want to rip into something, rip into it, like, and be constructive about it, right? Like, if you have a reason why you don't like a set, explain why, right? Just as opposed to the classic, I don't like it, I do like it, right? So,
and that's the perfect forum for it. They're asking you to do this. You're not yelling, you know, why did you ruin Magic at Mark Rosewater on his blog or whatever.
Right.
Like, this is the forum where you can vent whatever you want to say. But what do you think?
Until you get the blue screen, but not your typical.
You guys be snitching. Not to influence our viewers. You can do whatever you want. And this goes back to your point. Asking people, like, self-reflection questions is dubious because of this, right? People try to outsmart the survey. But if you were to link A and B, they'd be like, well, if you put saffron olive and you said saffron olive super negatively impacted Spider-Man, you're going to give saffron olive in the naughty list to Watson, right? So I don't want to do that. So I'm just not going to list saffron olive, right? Like, it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take too much to come to that conclusion, which is why this is kind of useless, right? If they really wanted it, they should look at YouTube views or whatever, right? Like, whatever they want to measure, right? Like, reposts on social media, whatever, to see like how much how popular pieces of content were and figure out how negative they were, and they can use that to send the Pinkertons to Seth's house. But asking people to self-assess, they're just gonna be like, nah, I'm not gonna list my favorite creators. In fact, I hate this creator. I hate Richard. We're gonna put Richard here, send the Pinkertons over there, right? Like, it's just a mess.
They're metagaming.
Metagaming the survey.
I mean, they're metagaming Magic players.
That's what we do.
Well, they're on level 8. They've outplayed themselves now, right? Wizards makes more Spider-Man because they didn't oust the bad creators, right?
There's no way they would oust you. I feel like I would direct the traffic. I would be sooner get ratted, like snitched on. We hate Krim. We're going to make sure he gets got because he actually likes Spider-Man.
I guess that is true. You could see it go the other way, too.
Yeah.
I will say, I think it's kind of funny that, like, the whole negative thing, because if you actually look at, and I guess I'm talking from my perspective, but if you look at the content I make holistically, even if you just limit it to Spider-Man, like 90%+ of that content is like, I'm trying to play a cool deck with Spider-Man cards, or I'm talking about the cool new spoiler cards that they released today. And then there's like one or two videos. And I actually think the worst one was actually just me opening collector booster boxes. I think that was the
video
that actually did the most to take the set, was just like, wow, I opened all these boxes that are $800 and I kept getting like $300 worth of cards out of them. That's kind of awkward. But
is that bad,
though?
Like, in that, like, why? There's no way.
Bucks.
Well, okay, that part, yes. That part, yes, the financial part of that. But I mean, you making these videos, is that bad? Like, is that even a negative video? That's just like,
box openings, it just is what it is. Some sets you run great, and it's like, wow, this set went awesome. And some sets you get no value, and it's like, oh, I wish I didn't spend all that money.
It was misappropriated.
There's no way. for
reasons. Because we were talking about the set that I were like, everyone hates Spider-Man. Like, this video is probably going to get, like, such bad views. And then we released it, and they were like, wait, everyone is using it to show how bad Spider-Man is. And they're all watching it, ironically, and it's getting tons of views. And it's actually just as popular as the Final Fantasy video.
It is, yeah.
Because it's, like, the banner for Universes Beyond is bad. And, like, people just take things and, you know, make it their own, right? I'm like, I don't know, right? But...
Yeah, and that was not the intent of the video. I just wanted to open some boxes because cracking packs is fun. But anyway, let's move on from this survey stuff. Richard, you mentioned Pick 2 Draft a minute ago, and we found out this week we're going to be getting more of it because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was confirmed on Weekly MTG to be a small set. It's going to be a Spider-Man-sized 190-card set, although Wizards did point out specifically that, unlike Spider-Man, it was designed to be a small set the whole time. This wasn't a we had to add more cards to it at the last minute type thing. It was always supposed to be this size. So, first off, What do you think of it being a small set again? Because I was thinking this might be a one-time thing for Spider-Man, but apparently it's not. And that means we're getting more pick two draft, Richard. Is that a good or a bad thing?
Well, first of all, it has to be a small set because I don't need the eighth Leonardo. Like there's only so many characters they can fit in here. So small set makes sense. Pick two, I have opinions about. I actually play, I wouldn't say a lot. I played like maybe 20 events. Which is more than Edge of Eternities, but like way less than Final Fantasy. And I thought it was fine. If you look at the narrative, so we'll go back to the community narrative. The narrative is there's a bunch of graphs floating around that like show like, okay, there's like this many games of Final Fantasy being played or were played, this many games of like Tarkir, Edge, or whatever. And then like Turtles is like, or not Turtles, Spider-Man. Not even Spider-Man, Through the Omen Paths is at the very bottom, like 10% the play rate or something, like no one is playing it. And everyone's saying it's a complete flop. And it probably is, but that's not the full picture, right? The data is 17 lands players. These are people that not only play draft, but play so much draft that they've installed an extra client and get like data about like, you know, win rates about in hand, in deck, like in archetypes. Like these are like the mega super invested nerds. And we, myself included, hate pick two draft. It's so like not draft. But there are people like, I don't know, Seth, you kind of enjoyed it.
I kind of don't mind it, yeah.
That don't normally play draft, right? Like they play constructed. And then maybe pick two draft lured them to play some draft. They probably don't have 17 lands installed. Their data would not be captured. Yep. Right? So if I were to rank ways to play Magic the Gathering, I would put traditional draft on top, followed by sealed, followed by pick two draft, and then go like a very large distance on your screen down, standard. Right?
Wow.
So even though pick two draft is way worse than traditional draft and sealed, right? I don't think it's anywhere close. And this format itself, I think there's only one viable archetype, which is green-white. Everything else is crap. Like, red doesn't even have playable cards. Way better than standard. Like, way better. Even, like, Omen Pass, I love all these cards I don't understand. You know, like, way better than standard, right? And if I was a standard player, I would be playing Omen Pass, right? But of course, if you only play traditional draft or not traditional draft, but like, you know, 8-player draft, like, because most people play best of one premier draft, right? This is a step down for you. The fact that it's Turtles again doing this, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know, because pick two draft is not draft. It's just like block constructed, but a little weirder, right? But that's still way better than actual constructed, in my opinion. Like, I don't want to play standard whatsoever, pioneer, whatever, modern, whatever, right? Like, I take pick two Omen Pass over that, easy.
So even the worst draft, or your least favorite draft format is just better than constructed is overall. I think the other thing that muddies the data is it launched alongside Spider-Man, which is, we were just talking about the survey and different issues with the set and the Omen pathing with different names. So I think it's hard also to sort out, like, especially, like, I know someone like you plays a lot of limited. I think you have the context to, like, form an opinion on it. But when I see some random takes on Reddit and stuff, I almost wonder how much of it is people disliking the set compared to disliking actual pick two draft. Like, if they launch pick two draft alongside Final Fantasy, would the narrative be different? Like, would people be talking about it differently just because they like Final Fantasy more than they like Spider-Man, it seems like, overall? So I think that also muddied the data. I don't mind pick two. I think that it's, I like the fun, fast experience. And I will also say that I think playing it online kind of misses the whole point of it. I feel like the biggest value of it is, like, you can do a draft with your casual commander pod, which is something that you couldn't really do easily with a traditional 8-player draft. You can just get these packs and you get your 3 buddies and you have your commander night. And once a month you play limited instead of you playing your commander decks. And I think that's actually, like, kind of appealing to me that there's a format for that. So I think the biggest upside of that format is not going to be reflected in arena play. And I think it makes sense that it wouldn't do as well on Arena, because you have the other option of what is seen as a better version of Limited City right there that you could be playing instead of that set. But what do you think about all this, Grim?
I think pick two is exactly that, though, Seth. I think it is something I could play with my casual draft pod, who probably would normally never play limited. This gives them, gives that kind of pod an entry point. And then when they get good at that, or at least have fun with that, then they can get into real drafting because they'll have some of the fundamentals already in place. So I like it for that. But
I think part of the mistake with that, and I totally agree, but I think part of the mistake is you don't get that on Arena, and the only option for the small set was pick two, right? Like, Richard, correct me if I'm wrong, but could you play a traditional Spider-Man draft if you wanted to? Or Omen Pass draft? That wasn't an option, right? Like, if you wanted to play the new set, you had to play pick two.
Not initially. I think later it was available, but maybe it was a bug or something. But initially, you could not do it at all. And then they also brought back like Final Fantasy just to like mess their numbers. I don't know if they're like, oh my God, no, it's playing limited. We need to make some gold. So they just brought back Final Fantasy draft. You're like, oh, you know, Owen Pass is like totally screwed now, right? If you're going to just throw Final Fantasy as a flashback draft. It's kind of crazy. But wait, have you guys, like, if you have a 4-player pod, can't you just draft like normal? Like, you pick one and you just cycle through more? Like, why do we need pick two for like 4-player pods? Like, I don't know, right? Like, it's not clear to me why this is necessary.
I think it just makes it easier. I think it's like training wheels limited, kind of. Like, you get two cards, so it kind of puts you in a direction earlier. Everyone gets in their lane. Everyone ends up with a functional deck. So I think it's just like an easier version of limited in some ways, which I think is not appealing to someone like you, or maybe someone who drafts a lot, but it might be appealing to someone who has almost never drafted before and is just like dipping their toes in the water for the first time. But I strongly feel like, you got to have set speed available for both, right? Like, designing sets so they can only be played in pick two seems like a weird choice to me. I would, if I was running Wizards, I would make sure that you could draft every set in a traditional way, and then also have pick two as an option for the players who want to play it that way.
And also, so I have two complaints about. So one is the structure of the events. So two losses and you're out, right? So yeah. you get one loss, and then the second loss you're out, which is more harsh than the normal way, which is three losses, right? So, you know, one game of Mana Screw, and then like you're kind of boned, right? That is a structural issue with pick two, which is probably going to carry over to Turtles. The other reason pick two drafts sucks is because the format itself sucks. I haven't checked the latest, but at least like 2 weeks in, like, red was simply unplayable. All the red commons sucked. At green white was the best. If you open like the nuts villains deck, you could get somewhere. But you know, if you just had like villains commons and uncommons, you were like kind of screwed. And then to make matters worse, green soup was a real deck. So the best deck was green white, and then green soup, which meant you would steal all the cards from the other archetypes. And like, there's only five archetypes, and they're all kind of sus to begin with. And so the format is like not balanced whatsoever. And the strategy I found the most success was just force green white every single time. And even with the most garbage green white, you can get two wins and break even. And then if for whatever reason green white is open or remotely open, you can, you know, go and make some progress on your gems, right? But the format was simply not good, as opposed to Final Fantasy, where 1,000 games in, I'm still playing new archetypes, right? I'm still having different draft experiences. So maybe Turtles can fix that part of it. They actually have like five balanced archetypes that's actually good. And then we can really see how pick two plays into this.
Oh, go ahead, Grim.
I'm curious if Turtles will fix that, right? Because this sounds like also a small set problem. Like, I don't know if I like the idea of small sets in limited. If I were a limited player, that would concern me. As someone who's constructed like exclusively, that's fine, right? Like, small sets don't bother me as much. But if you're a limited person, this sounds like a nightmare.
It's kind of funny that you said that, because I was actually, and I know things change and whatever, but I was going back to when an article that Merrill wrote when they got rid of three set blocks, which was 2017. They announced Metamorphosis 2.0, and he went through all the issues that they were trying to fix by getting rid of blocks and switching to two set blocks and then getting rid of blocks. But one of the things that he brought up in there multiple times was the third set was always a small set, and we realized that small sets have all these problems and that players don't really like drafting small sets, and they were hard to fit in the context to the rest of the game. So I think that like some of those issues, like limited not working as well with small sets, is something that isn't necessarily even new to Spider-Man or the last couple of years, but it's something that's been going on for a long time, that like Wizards has data from almost a decade ago that players just don't like drafting small sets and they don't work as well for limited as large sets. But what do you think, Richard? You play the most limited. Like, can you have good limited with a small set?
It's different, because back in the day, small set meant like Innistrad, Dark Ascension. You know, like, it was one pack of your three-pack draft. And the reason people didn't like it is it was, like, not impactful at all. Or even if it was impactful, it was only one pack. It also came at the end. So, like, you couldn't choose a card from that to build around because it was third pack. So I think it's, like, actually just completely different.
Okay.
Like, because now small set draft really means five archetypes, right? Like, Spider-Man was five archetypes as opposed to the normal 10. There's less, like, range of cards to try weird archetypes with, but I'm sure we'll get bonus sheet cards, which, you know, add a wrinkle to the draft. But it is different, right? I don't think we've had it. Have we ever had a straight triple small set draft before?
So
Omen Paths?
What was Dragon's Maze? No.
Not officially, but they
that
did.
That was Theros, yeah, whatever, Dragon's Maze. Born of the Gods, Dragon's Maze, right? That's three packs.
So we never had them as official format, but they would play triple small set on Magic Online when they released like the small third set. That was one of the options. So I remember playing like some of it, and it was always I kind of enjoyed it sometimes, but it was very wonky and just like different than normal draft. But to wrap this up, Richard, currently, how much of the issues do you blame on the cards in the set, and how much of the issues and your dislike of the format do you blame on the actual format itself? Like, is the current problem Spider-Man's a bad set for limited and limited happens to be pick two, or pick two is a bad way to play draft and it happens to be Spider-Man that it launched with?
Yes. Both.
Both.
Okay, it's a branding issue, okay? If you pick two with Final Fantasy, it's still going to suck, okay? What you need to call it is like highly variable constructed, and then put it with like standard. It's like fancy block constructed. I actually liken it more to Jumpstart. I actually played a lot of Jumpstart Final Fantasy.
Okay.
That's where you get like two packs, you shuffle them together or whatever, and you end up with this weird block constructed deck with some variants in it. That's what Omen Paths is. It's not draft. Like, I don't consider it draft. I think it's just like if you took a standard deck, spilt it on the floor, and then picked it back up, but you only picked up like 75% of your deck. Like, that's what you kind of end up with, right? Like, it's some weird version of constructed, which is why constructed only players, I think, would really enjoy it. But like, anyone who's drafting, like, there's no signals. Like, it's like very condensed. There's only five archetypes. Like, it's not draft, and it's not sealed. Like, sealed is way better in my opinion than it as well. So I don't know, it's limited, but it's not really limited. So I would much prefer if we grouped it with constructed.
Interesting. Well, let us know what y'all think about two-pick draft, because I imagine we're at least getting another set focused on it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles just based on the set size, but I guess we'll have to see. Krim, I want to ask you something. So they did an event on Arena this week, which was a metagame challenge, but for Brawl, which I believe is the first time that they've done this. And we have talked in the past about, could there ever be like a ranked Brawl queue? Because Brawl is actually very popular on Arena. More and more people are playing it. And it seems like this metagame challenge went over pretty well. I didn't get a chance to play it, but I was just watching the response to it, and there was a lot of people who said, like, it's the most fun I've had playing Magic in a long time. I want a permanent queue of it. Do you think that Arena could support, like, some sort of competitive Brawl? Like, could we have a ranked Brawl queue or these metagame challenges? Or is there a concern that it would split the format too much, and then when you go to join your Brawl game, you're going to be sitting there for, you know, 5 minutes waiting for an opponent because now they're in two queues rather than one queue? What do you think about competitive Brawl on Arena?
I think it is a fun experiment to have once in a while because I think it is fun to have it once in a while or have it like a special, like, you know, ranked event. But if you make another ladder and it is, you know, like it's just another format on Arena when it's like, hold on, we're still working to get to Pioneer. Pioneer will be dead by the time it comes to Explore, like, you know, when it comes to Arena in full, if they keep doing this, right?
That,
like,
actually might be true.
I think the resources are better spent elsewhere because, I don't know. I mean, like, Brawl is fun, but I want to go somewhere where I could play non-singleton for a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I love playing, like, you know, 60 cards for this stuff. Like, the 60 card four of formats and whatnot. I think we could, that's just me. Personally, so, I didn't have a blast playing it. It didn't keep my focus. I had more fun playing standard.
So stick to 60 card. What do you think, Richard? We see dual commander be popular in some places in paper, right? 1v1 competitive commander. Do you think that's something that should come to Arena?
Wait, I'm confused. How do you play Brawl today? Is there no Brawl queue?
It's all unranked. It's all just casual. So there's no ranked mode.
You want
or anything.
My hot take?
So you can
Seth?
Play whenever, but
we should get
yeah.
rid of all the unranked queues.
Ooh,
is this
really?
Okay,
why
is this a problem in 2025? Okay, so I explained to you my friend group in like 2005, okay, when rank was the first thing, right? People would be scared of playing ranked, okay? They're like, oh, we're playing ranked, we gotta, like, you know, we gotta put on our suit or whatever, drink 5 Red Bulls, be ready for this thing, right? And they're like super focused, and then they're like terrified of playing ranked, right? Because, oh, I might lose like 2 elo, man, right? And then they would all play casual all the time. But I was like playing ranked like left and right, and I'm like, yeah, I'm just gonna quit in the middle of this ranked game, I gotta go whatever, like, doesn't what does it matter, right?
Whatever.
I'm
just, yeah.
I'm playing like so many things, and like I had like zero rank anxiety. The only time I have rank anxiety is like when I'm trying to like level up, right? You're like one game before mythic, like, you know, better lock in, right? I don't want to have to go play 5 more games to hit mythic. But in general, yep. I don't take it seriously. I don't know, right? But other people took it like super, like their whole self worth was like connected to their rank. Does that still happen in 2025? I feel like that might have been a thing that happened when we first got these like ranked games. But does that still happen? Do people still just play unranked because they don't want to see number go down? Because why don't you just make one Brawl queue, make it ranked to serve everyone, right? Like, you know, so you don't split the queues, but if you're super sweaty, you can try to get to the top of Mythic. If you're not, then you can just sit around bronze, gold, silver, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, what does it really matter? And you're fighting people your same skill level. Isn't that what you want anyway, right? So do we still have this issue in 2025? I don't know.
I don't know. Is that still
I hope
a thing?
Not.
I haven't had that issue. Like, I think people still care about their rank because I definitely see people posting what they got to Mythic with. Like, people treat that like a thing that matters on Arena. When you get to Mythic, you post your deck list on social media or whatever. I haven't heard anxiety, though, being a thing. Do you think that's still an issue, Krim? Like, rank anxiety?
I don't know. I don't know, because like, yeah. For me, I've never had that anxiety. Like, if I get dumpstered, I don't care, right? Like, I just go. I actually find playing casual queues and whatnot a waste of time in any game. I go the first game of any game I play right into ranked. So, like,
yep.
Kick
yep.
me,
yeah, see?
Kick me, do whatever you got to do, right? Like, first thing I do is ranked. I throw all my elo into the pits. I don't care, right? Like, because for me, ranked in any game does not matter. I just go in there and I just have fun, right? And I do not care. Like, I want to see what the best of the best is going to do against my random jank, right? So I just want to go in there and give out free wins and do dumb plays and see if I get punished for it.
I would like the solution of having all Brawl be ranked, honestly. I don't know. Let me know in the comments, because maybe there's a bunch of people I don't know who are very anxious about playing ranked, and maybe that would make this plan fall apart. But one of my problems with Brawl is, like, I sometimes wish people would take it more seriously, if that makes sense. Like, in the sense that when I try to record a Brawl video, you run into a lot of people who, like, whatever, like mulligan ones and just scoop the game, or they miss their third land drop and they just scoop the game, or you land on an island and they just scoop the game. Like anything that goes slightly wrong, they just, you have so many people that play Brawl that just run their commander out the first chance they get into open mana, and then you counter or kill it, and then they just scoop the game and go on to the next one. So I kind of wish there was a little bit of a rank queue just to like discourage that and encourage people to actually like play more of the game. But I don't know. I guess Brawl's been popular with the current setup, so maybe it's not necessary, but...
Do you think a ranked queue fixes that problem? Because I feel like that...
Well, not if everyone plays like us and just doesn't care about ranked.
If you start roping
me
in ranked, I'm just going to quit immediately. You know, there's people that sit in like an 8 hour, you know, like League of Legends, whatever, like, oh, they were like holding this hostage, and I need to save my like three, you know, elo or whatever, so I'm going to sit here for 6 hours. And I'm like... Bro, you wrote me twice, I'm gone. I could be like number one mythic trying to go, you know, whatever, right? I'm like, I'm done with this, right? So
I guess that is true, because I only play ranked for every other format other than Brawl, and there are still people that like get a ban hand and just scoop. And when you're playing ranked standard or whatever, I'm sure it happens to you too, Grim. Like there's sometimes that you lead. It happens a lot with Izzet. Like if I was playing a random Izzet deck and you lead on an Izzet dual land and people assume you're on VV Cauldron, so they just scoop. And I'm like, no, I'm playing it against the odds deck. You don't have to do that. I just happen to have
maybe
an Izzet
they were
dual
scooping
land.
Because you're playing against the odds. Like, oh, Saffron Olive. yeah, I'm trying to test for my Arsenal to the reverse. Get out of here.
that could also be.
I'm not trying to get put onto a video.
Speaking of RCQs, we just had a regional championship this weekend, and it was in Modern. We had a Modern regional championship, and the last time we talked about Modern, we were looking in after the Pro Tour, and the conversation of the Pro Tour was, oh my god, Belcher, Mono Blue Belcher won, super combo heavy meta. This weekend, there was almost no Belcher. It seems like the meta has adjusted to Belcher. And the way that the meta adjusted seems to be just by going even faster than Belcher and not caring about counter spells. Because if you look at the top eight of this event, two Izzet Prowess decks in there, which is just a super fast aggro deck with Cutter and Slingshot Showoffs. You got a couple of Blink decks. You got an Affinity deck that was just like the one from the Pro Tour. You got an Amulet Titan deck. You got a Goryeo's Vengeance deck. What do you make of this meta, Richard? Like, to me, this seems kind of healthy, right? That a month ago we had a Pro Tour that was Belcher dominated, and now we have a complete shift as the meta figured out how to beat Belchers, which I think is a good sign for the health of the meta.
Yeah, it sounded like no one played Modern before this, and then now everyone's playing Modern, so the meta game is like going through its iterations. But so far, so good, right? If every week there's a new top deck, and people are like, oh yeah, I know how to fight this, and then another deck rises, and then another deck rises, another deck rises, that's good, right? It still doesn't fix the fundamental problem of me, like Tarmogoyf is still not seeing any tops, so I don't care particularly.
Yeah,
but it looks good, right? Everyone's like, yeah, I know how to beat Belcher, and they beat Belcher, so it works, right? So it's looking healthy.
It's so funny
and
because
Mill
like
showed
and
up.
Mill? Yeah, Mill showed up. Dude. We saw some Mill showing up. The meta was super diverse. I think like the top deck was 10 or 11%. In a lot of ways, if you look at the meta and the diversity, it looks very much like Modern 10 years ago, where you have a bunch of different decks that are tier that can win a tournament any weekend. Nothing's more than like 10-12% of the meta, which is very much like some of the peak eras of Modern. But that, like Richard said, that also doesn't help if you're concerned with Modern or your problem with Modern is you want to play Tarmogoyf, or you want to play Sphinx's Revelation, or you want to play Birthing Pod, or like you like if that's what you want out of Modern is to play with these old cards, you're not really going to get that because it is definitely a new card dominated format with a lot of Horizon stuff and stuff from like Lord of the Rings and so forth. So it's not going to scratch that itch, but I do think the format is healthier than it's been in a long, healthier than it's been maybe at any point in the Modern Horizons era, which is a good thing. So I think that's exciting, even if it's not ever going to go back to 2015, I don't think.
Yeah, that sounds like a play design kind, or like a design issue more than the health of the format, right? Like if you're not playing because you want to play with Tarmogoyf, trust me, Richard, I get it. I want to play with Vendilion Click and not get laughed out of the building, right? So
you know what? I should have been an Amulet Titan player. I could have played Modern forever. The deck that never goes away, Amulet Titan, like should have played that deck.
Oh, Amulet Titan. I hate that deck. But that is true. That deck's always just at the top of the meta. Anyway, let's answer some fish mail questions. We got a couple of fish mail questions this week. And our first one, I think this is an interesting question. I want to address it at least. From at KRTZDC says, what if Standard had two subformats? Standard Within and Standard Beyond. Standard Within only with universes being set, within sets. Standard Beyond, the opposite. Real Standard can exist along with two formats closer in size to what Standard used to be. I've seen this suggestion a lot of times. Why don't you just do a Universes Beyond only format? I don't think it could work. I don't think I just Wizards has said this, and I actually think that I agree with them here, that there's probably just not enough demand to make this work. What I've seen from Standard recently is a lot of players saying, I can't get a game of Standard at my LGS. I went to an RC at my LGS and three people showed up, or they canceled it because not anyone signed up. So I think we already have a problem with just getting enough people to play Standard, specifically in paper, but getting enough people to play Standard when you have it all together. It's really hard for me to imagine that you could split Standard in two and have Universes Within and Universes Beyond Standards and get enough people, because we're already not getting enough people. But am I missing something? What do you guys think? Is there any way that you could have two different standards here and have it work?
That is too many formats. There is such a thing as too many formats, and I think Standard should just stay whatever it is. And anything that would need to change in Standard should just change the format in whole and not like kind of splinter off into sub-formats. So I personally would not want Standard 2, right? I would like Standard 1 and then just have that be it. And then only have to keep track of just Standard.
Yeah. Splitting is bad, but also the distinction is arbitrary. Because I am sure most people want Final Fantasy in the good format. And I'm sure they want Murders of Karloff Manor not in the good format. Or Aether Drift not in the good format. Yeah. So the distinction is kind of arbitrary. But I think there's not enough Standard demand to be splitting Standard, but the only way is grassroots movement, right? If you truly believe in this, you know, you try to get your LGS to do this format, you try to get it popular enough such that they run it as side events at a Grand Prix Magicon type kind of event, and then eventually Wizards will print some product to ruin it, but you know, Wizards will pick it up, right? And then, you know, like that's how Pauper started. That's how Commander started, right? Like these kind of grassroots movements. So if you truly believe in such a thing, you gotta get it out there, right? At least start with your LGS, make them play it, you know, put out some YouTube videos, spread the word, other people will pick it up if it's like truly fun. But don't expect Wizards to do it. Wizards not gonna do it until it's like basically guaranteed.
Yeah. That is how it works. But thank you for the question. Also, second fish mail. This one comes from Cole P through email. Says, I got another fish mail question for you. How does the team decide who gets to play what commanders when there's a new set? I assume for Commander Clash. Is it first come, first serve? And has there ever been a point where all four of you wanted to play the same commander? Any funny stories from behind the scenes on this? So, Richard Krim, how do we pick commanders when a new set comes out for Commander Clash?
It really depends on the set, right? I don't think there's a generic, like, over, like, arcing way to just pick something, right? Like, I just go, okay, well, this set is, I don't know, this universe is beyond, and if it's a universe is beyond thing, I will usually pick depending on the character, right? Maybe on the character I like more. If it's an in-universe set, like, I don't know, let's just go with, like, Duskmourn or something.
Mill.
Yeah, Grixis Mill, or this has cool art. Or has really cool design, but there's no, like, priority, right? Like, it's not like... Because I think during Final Fantasy, both Tomer and I love Vivi as characters.
Yep.
So it's like, I don't know, we'll figure it out. We just do this thing where we communicate. And then that's it, really. At least when it comes to that.
Yeah, it is generally first come, first serve. Like, if you have a commander that you really want to play and you call it, for the most part, you'll get to play that commander. But especially with situations like the VB situation where you have multiple people that are interested in the same commander, it is a matter of just kind of like talking it through or whatever. Richard, anything to add to that?
It doesn't really matter. Usually, Krim always gets dibs because he's the youngin'. And he actually has preferences. So there are people that, so like, I think Phil has a stronger preference. He usually takes some Civic pile or Lotus looking thing. Krim will take his favorite character or some Grixis pile. Tomer usually has some kind of preference. And then usually Seth and I just like, yeah, whatever. We just like choose something to fill out the pod to make sure the pod looks sane. But I don't know, like, it's never been a problem in like 18 million years of Commander Clash, right? We all have our preferences, but like at the end of the day, we play so much Magic, we don't really care. Like, if you want to play VV today, I can play VV in the future, or I can play it elsewhere. Like, it's not that big of an issue. So yeah, we haven't really put much thought into it.
The only other consideration would be like trying to avoid doubling up in the same colors or whatever. There's like multiple Izzet commanders from the same set. We're probably going to try to not have two people playing Izzet on the same week if we can help it for the, you know, the new set release, little things like that. But in general, that's mostly how it works. So thank you for the questions, Richard. How do people send in questions for the next podcast?
All right. Hit us up at MTGGoldfish with the hashtag MTGFishmail, and we'll get to your questions on air.
And I believe that brings us to the end of episode 558 of the MTG Goldfish podcast. So, Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have a spectacular week, everyone. And this is a Grew signing out.